My guest at this time is Barbara Comstock. She's a member of the Virginia House of Delegates, and she is affiliated with the Workforce Fairness Institute. We want to get her reaction to a significant Supreme Court decision on Thursday. No, it wasn't about the president's health care plan or Arizona's immigration law, but one focused on labor unions. Specifically, by a 7-2 decision, a large majority of the Supreme Court ruled that labor unions could not mandate that non-union members of a closed union shop be forced to pay surprise dues in order to specifically fund political campaigning efforts. The case in question specifically referred to the SEIU, Service Employees Union, out in the state of California. And Barbara, thanks very much for being with us.
Great to be with you.
How significant is this decision?
Well, it's a pretty significant decision, less for the actual specific holding than for the courts, you know, really looking at what they call the critical First Amendment rights are at stake. You know, for years, for decades, unions have benefited massively from coerced funding. And so you're going to see unions being pretty concerned about what this could mean in future cases, because in the past, the Supreme Court has allowed for a significant impingement on First Amendment rights of employees who choose not to join a union. And what the situation is the court has ruled that the government may compel non-members of a union under, if they're in a closed shop, so if you're in a state where you don't have right to work laws, where, you know, if the workplace is unionized, it's a closed shop, and they require people who aren't a member there to pay fees to the union to support the union's activities that are related to collective bargaining, but then they are allowed to object, although they have to affirmatively choose to opt out of paying costs of the union's political and ideological activities. So, you know, for example, you have a lot of these unions, you know, in the last presidential cycle gave about $400 million to the Obama campaign. So if you're a worker in a union closed shop, and you're being forced to pay dues for the collective bargaining, then you're not supposed to be forced to pay for the political and ideological activities. And in this case, what happened is, you know, they're only required to give, I guess, that notice once a year, and then when they came around and wanted to increase the dues again for political activity, the union said that they was only those non-members who had objected to the annual fee initially who could object to a second special assessment. And the court said, no, I'm sorry, that's going too far. But the language in the court decision that's talking about employees having First Amendment rights and being able to object to these kind of things in the workplace is probably going to be the most troubling part of this decision for those who have been able to force unions in the workplace and force people to have to pay for a lot of activities in their workplace that they may not support themselves.
Barbara, let's talk about where this could go from here then. If non-union members are given what the court has called a First Amendment right to refuse to contribute for these purely political exercises, what do you think that'll mean down the line for union members, whether it's a specific dues hike for this or even for the component of their regular dues that would go for political purposes?
Well, as we've seen recently in the Wisconsin case, when people aren't forced to pay dues, when the unions have to go to people and affirmatively get them to shell out the money out of their pocket instead of being able to basically capture them one time and then force them to have to pay dues all the time, their dues drop dramatically. So obviously, you know, the initial concern here is going to be this is going to make it easier for those people who object to the political activities of many unions to say, you know, not with my money. I want that piece of my money back. And, you know, I want, and I have to be told about when you do these additional activities, which may mean a bigger portion of the dues are actually going to political activity as opposed to collective bargaining activities. Because that's a big problem with a lot of these unions. Instead of putting the money towards their members and towards the workplace rights of their members and maybe the pensions of their members, they're putting a lot of these dues towards political activities. And, you know, my husband has been a teacher for years. He's an assistant principal now. But, you know, back in the day when he was a teacher, unfortunately we live in Virginia, which is a right-to-work state, so we didn't have to join a union. But you know, still, even in a right-to-work state, people are often concerned about that they might be sued, and they really push you to say, well, if you want to have protections against any lawsuits that might come your way, you're better off joining the union. But then you join the union, and then you don't like all the political activities because you're saying, hey, well, I'm not a lockstep Democrat, which 99% of these unions are. And so just because I may want to have legal protection doesn't mean I want to give all kinds of money to political parties that I oppose their political agenda on many fronts. This could have a big impact on initially the dues that go in there and their ability to, you know, kind of pick the pockets of people who philosophically oppose them. But I think it also opens the door to other First Amendment limitations that our labor laws have in place. You know, when you have a union election in the workplace, there are, you know, it's not at all like what we are used to in an election where you have the back and forth, and, you know, you may not like what people say about you. I mean, I'm obviously a delegate. You know, people, when someone runs against me, as you can imagine, I usually disagree with their interpretation of some of the attacks that are incoming, and probably my opponents have, you know, not agreed with things that I've said. But we work it out. We both have our First Amendment rights. You go out to the public and you appeal to the public on facts, and then people come in and, you know, I correct my opponent. You know, things get corrected in the system by other people, and you have that back and forth, and you're each allowed your First Amendment rights. With union elections, it's totally different. You have the National Labor Relations Board that can come in and regulate all kinds of speech by employers and really limit their ability to say to their employees, hey, we don't think this is going to be good for the workplace, and here's why. And those extreme limitations on the First Amendment, if most candidates, Democrat or Republican, ever had to be subjected to what an employer is in a unionization effort, they would scream bloody murder. They would not be able, you know, Barack Obama would not want to live under the election rules that he imposes on all kinds of employers across this country, and what his National Labor Relations Board, you know, that often wants to, he's got members on the National Labor Relations Board that basically want to gag employees and say, you don't get to speak at all. When we come in and we want to unionize your workplace, we get to talk to your employees, and you shouldn't really have anything to say to them. We should just have a one-sided discussion here, and then there's not even any repercussions. If their facts are wrong, if they come in and lie, nothing happens to them. But you have a political board that's stacked with union cronies who can come in and make all kinds of take all kinds of charges against an employer for what they decide they don't like what you said about why a union is or is not valuable. So I think this whole opening of the First Amendment door and what that might pretend is good, because in the modern age, when we have so much access to information on the internet and on all the other forms of communication we now have, the democratization of information, if you will, people are smart enough to be able to take in information, the good and the bad, and to be able to evaluate it for themselves. And, you know, I certainly hope that's the direction this is going. This is, I should emphasize, this decision is much more limited. It is a narrow decision, but you can be sure that the unions are going to be upset about it, because they have really had the upper hand in limiting employer speech and limiting the rights of employees who don't want to be in a union to get out of one when you're in a union closed shop state. So this actually increases the rights of workers, increases the rights of free speech, and that's a good thing in democracy, but it's probably a bad thing if you're a union.
Barbara, as you say, it's not the biggest shot necessarily fired in this battle, but it's certainly an important one, and we'll see where the debate goes from here. Thank you very much for your time.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
Absolutely. Barbara Comstock is a member of the Virginia House of Delegates, and she's also affiliated with the Workforce Fairness Institute. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.